right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Friday, June 8th, 2018. And this is the grand finale of Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Friday, everyone. It is a beautiful 65 degrees and sunny here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off on Wednesday? We titled the show Before the First Cup with guests Clint Richardson and Patrick Jordan, Reinventing Nature. We spent a lot of time talking about bacteriophages, or more affectionately known as phages, that are not only being added to our meat products purchased out of grocery stores, but also to our vegetables, our lettuces, our spinaches. We found out also broccoli and tomato. And these phages are viruses. They're the most prevalent virus in our atmosphere and in our globe. And they contaminate every living organism on this planet. And they devour bacteria. So, of course, this is being used as the life jacket to save us from antibiotic-resistant bacteria, because, you know, it's mutating all the time, and our antibiotics aren't strong enough anymore. So these phages are something that they are really pushing. It is something that Patrick illustrated very well in his historical timeline, that they have been messing with this stuff way back when, and over, I think he said, in England, and I'd also read about in Russia. They've been doing this for a very long time, but when Lilly, I think it was Eli Lilly, he mentioned, took over something, all of a sudden antibiotics became the thing, and they gave up on phages. Well, it's back now, and we're going to talk a little bit more. I was going to let this go, but I almost think we have to talk about it a little bit more. Now, one of the things that I didn't get to mention in the show on Wednesday, but I have talked about before, was a story from a little while ago. This actually was April 13th, 2018, but I remember seeing it a little earlier than this. They announced grandly, and this publication is out of the New York Times, trillions, not just trillions, trillions upon trillions of viruses are falling from the sky each day. Now, what a revelation is that? How do we not know that before? We just figured it out now. We're going to tell you all about it. I personally think that this is like the greatest, what was his name? Frank Zappa used to say that when it's all over, they put the chairs up on the tables and get rid of the backdrop, and all you see is a brick wall. And that's pretty much what it is. Trillions upon trillions of viruses are falling from the sky each day. And as a matter of fact, they are the most prevalent organism on Earth and in Earth's biosphere. This one is out of National Institute of Health. Phages in Nature. And this is why this is so important, because they're tinkering with these things in the lab. They're creating synthetic DNA. We found out George Church has been working all over that stuff, and Craig Venter as well. They're creating synthetic DNA and inserting it into these viral organisms that look like little, like Clint said, little Mars rovers. They have legs. They have a little payload, the capsid up top, that's made out of proteins. And inside of that protein sac, it's just like a big fat spider. You know, you see those big fat spiders with the sac. Well, that sac is loaded with their viral DNA, and they can attack your cells, and then they inject with this little drill mechanism right into your cells, and they inject their DNA, which then goes in and incorporates itself into your DNA. And that would be considered a DNA virus. And that's like we've discussed with things like chickenpox and the long herpes family of viruses like Epstein-Barr and HPV and things of that nature. These are DNA viruses. These are viruses that incorporate themselves into your genetic makeup. And what's even more frightening is we discovered through study that I had done, we found a story that had talked about these viruses being able to be passed through the placenta. But Patrick had also verified that it'll be passed down from your DNA to your offspring's DNA. Now, if I'm not mistaken, I have read and heard the term retroviruses a few times. If I'm not mistaken, I believe a retrovirus is something that they have dubbed that potentially could have been incorporated into our human DNA like millions of years ago. But who knows? You know, that's just whatever. That's just a fantasy story, a theory they came up with. But interesting that we could all be infected with things, like I said before, that you had no idea about. And now as we're doing DNA sequencing, you know, bloop, under $1,000, pretty good price point there, considering it used to cost, I believe, $1 million. We're finding out all these different things about organisms that we didn't know how they interacted with the biosphere. So, all right, this is titled Phages in Nature. So this is why this is important to me. And this is almost like Invasion of the Body Snatchers. If anyone's ever seen that movie, the one from 1977, I believe. My daughter and I just watched that, I think the last summer, but it was great to see that again. You should watch that movie because they come down from outer space like little spores. What if they're spore bacteria with little flagella that can infect you through things you eat or whatever? You know, we talked about those, the NASA clean rooms last two shows ago, where they said that they can't even completely sterilize rovers that they're sending to other planets from Earth pathogens. So how are they planning to do that when they start doing asteroid mining and that and bringing payloads back to Earth? I just don't see, you know, there's going to be stuff there that, number one, we've never experienced before, especially been floating out in the, you know, nether regions of space. But number two, what if there's other biological technologies out there that are way smaller than anything we've ever seen or can detect? You know, just like they were never able to find the bovine leukemia virus back in the 70s, and they said, oh, it had no interaction with human health. No, don't worry about it. Keep drinking it. Until we got better microscopes, and they were able to now see that, oh, yes, bovine leukemia virus has been found in breast cancer. Well, imagine that. And bovine leukemia virus attacks mammary glands of cows. So why would it not attack mammary glands of other organisms that consume it? I'm just saying there's a much bigger picture here that isn't visible to the human eye, naturally, that is being manipulated. This whole genetic sequencing biotechnology boom is a part of the singularity. I mean, we talked about the progression of events and how these pieces are all connected on the show on Wednesday, but we've kind of illustrated that over the last 7 years we've looked at all these pieces in depth, and I hope that you saw the connection. I mean, it was just like a continuing story for 7 years. Sometimes we jumped the gun and made a right turn, but it's because they're all connected in some way, somehow. You know, once you get into artificial intelligence, that is about command and control. That is about full spectrum dominance and being able to bag tag and track everything. That is about the dashboard, right? That's going to have your 230-point facial recognition and your little DNA sequence. Just click on the button. You can take a quick look at it. Look at everyone they've ever known. Kind of like that project that DARPA Dan had worked on. Oh, Memorex, I think it was called. And he was going to use that to connect the dots between all of the different social medias, emails, whatever, any of the dark web. He's going to be able to map together groups of people that seem to have some sort of correlation. Well, you know, think about what they can do. We talked about DNA sequencing and why you never want to give up your DNA to one of those genealogy places is because, first and foremost, and I don't remember if it was 23andMe or genealogy, one of them, I think it might have been 23andMe, we read the terms and conditions. We read the fine print on the show. We found out that forever and ever, you pay them your $99.95, get one free for Auntie Janie. But we found out that once you give them your DNA, that they could use it for whatever they want. And if they develop some sort of miracle cure based upon something that they found in your sequencing as to why you're not affected by something or why you are a good example of something, they don't have to pay you, and they own that forever and ever. And I believe it actually said something through your progeny, but I'm starting to understand what that section meant now, because we found out that they caught that Golden State Killer. And now there were some other stories that came out about that, but initially the story was they caught the Golden State Killer because they tracked some of his relatives and were able to either contact them or look at connections between them and others and find like similar sequences that meant they were part of the same family. So I think that's what that means. But don't give up your DNA, because not only can they do that, but now they can render images of exactly what your face looks like. So, all right, I want to continue on with bacteriophages. I got off on a tangent, and let's not let me do that anymore. I want to try to be as succinct as possible today so we can jam in these 22 tabs that I have lined up here. So now let's go. Bacteriophages in nature. Bacteriophages are the most abundant organism in the biosphere, and they are a ubiquitous feature of prokaryotic existence. A bacteriophage is a virus which infects a bacterium, and archaea are also infected by viruses. Whether these should be referred to as phages is debatable, but then they are as included as such in the scope of this article. Phages have been of interest to scientists as tools to understand fundamental molecular biology. So that's kind of at the root of it all. Is vectors. We've talked about vectors. Vectors are things that contain other organisms that can infect other things. As vectors of horizontal gene transfer, ding-a-ling-a-ling, like inserting their DNA payload into yours, as well as drivers of bacterial evolution. Now, that's something else that we didn't get to touch on Wednesday's show, but how I wanted to kind of look at this evolution that is going on between bacteriophages and bacteria. And one of the biggest places for bacteriophages to live is not only falling from the sky trillions upon trillions per cubic centimeter per day all over the planet, but how they also live in your virome, and that is the virus breakup of your gut. All right, so anyways, vectors of horizontal gene transfer, as well as drivers of bacterial evolution, and as sources of diagnostics and genetic tools as novel therapeutic agents. They are going to fix you through your gut with these little therapeutic nanobots, and they are literally nanobots that can then be directed to accomplish certain chemical or DNA mechanisms so you can be edited on the fly. Unraveling the biology of phages and the relationship with their hosts, because they are some sort of parasite, is a key to understanding microbial systems and this is a key phrase, their exploitation. Ding, 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 ding. We are being exploited, people, and we didn't even know it. And in this article, we describe the roles of phages in different host systems and show how modeling, microscopy, isolation, genomics, and metagenomics. And metagenomics is the actual bacterial makeup of your gut, and we're going to look at that a little bit later. That is where we find the whole plasmid thing that we didn't get to, and maybe we'll get there today. Our based approaches, and they have come together to provide unparalleled insight into these small but vital constituents of the microbial world. Where are we going to go? Well, let's take a look at the next story. All right, let's look at the gut virome. The human gut virome, a multifaceted majority. Now, we found out a long time ago that our microbiome, and that is the collection of all of these things that lives inside of our gut, is responsible for a lot of our health and for our mental health, as well as our physical health. And when your microbiome gets screwed up, whether it be through eating foods that have been treated with glyphosate, we found that they affect an enzyme, a cytochrome P450 enzyme. And they are the root of inflammation, of leaky gut syndrome, all kinds of different ills that then can cause even more ills like autoimmune disease. But they also are responsible for pushing chemical buttons and pulling chemical strings through the vagus nerve directly to your brain. Your gut microbiome imbalance could be the cause of your depression, or it could be the cause of chronic headaches or achy joints, maybe even cardiovascular disease or cancer. You know, there as they continue on in their studies, they are finding out more and more connections and how everything is not only an ecosystem, but a very huge biosphere. You know, the microbes that live in our environment, like on the ground, in the grass, and rotting trees in the forest, is like the digestive system of the planet. Kind of like the digestive system of humans. So anyway, the human gut virome, a multifaceted majority, this is out of the National Institute of Health, September 11th, 2015. Here we outline our current understanding of the human gut virome, in particular, the phage component of this ecosystem, ding, ding, highlighting progress and challenges in viral discovery in this arena. We reveal how developments in high-throughput sequencing technologies and the associated data analysis methodologies are helping to illuminate this abundant, quote, biological dark matter, unquote. Current evidence suggests that the human gut virome is highly individual, but temporally stable collective and dominated by phages existing in a temperate lifestyle. This viral community also appears to encode a surprisingly rich functional repertoire that confers a range of attributes to their bacterial hosts, ranging from bacterial virulence and pathogenesis to understanding of the gut virome, to maintaining host microbiome stability and community resistance. Despite significant advances in our understanding of the gut virome in recent years, it is clear that we remain in a period of discovery and revelation, and as new methods and technologies begin to provide deeper understanding of the inherent ecological characteristics of this ecosystem. Let's stop right there, because they're saying that we really don't know. We know it's a big part. We know that it has a lot to do with how everything else ticks, but we really don't know how this all works. And as our understanding increases and we use you as the guinea pig to figure it all out, I'm going to add in brackets, the nature of this multipartite interaction occurring between host and microbiome will become clearer, helping us to more rationally define the concepts and the principles that will underpin approaches to using the human gut virome components for medical or biotechnological applications. Ding, ling, ling, ling. Now, if anybody is interested over the summer break that we are going to take from classes here, there, and I've mentioned this before, but I might bookmark this one again, maybe take some of my free time to let my mind jump on something that I've wanted to do for a very long time. MIT, which is one of the places that a lot of this technology is coming out of, offers their open courseware material, which are full online college classes with all the documentation that you can take yourself for free. So I found a link, and I will include this in the notes. It is their whole biology curriculum that looks at all of these different technologies, as well as genetics, molecular biology, building little machines, nanobots, making synthetic stuff, all about cancer, different diseases within the body, DNA wars, RNAi, like RNA interference, where they don't even have to snippity-snip. They could just directly flip switches on and off. I mean, if anybody is interested or has time or is bored, you could take some of these classes and then become an advisor or a study partner with me for when I come back in September. All right, so now let's continue on a little bit more. So we find out how important these phages are. We find out our guts are loaded with them, and they directly influence our microbiome that is a pillar stone of your physical health. Now, here's another story, and this is out of Cell.com from a publication called Trends in Microbiology. And it is from, where's the date? February 10th, 2014, titled Exploiting Gut Bacteriophages for Human Health. Again, using the word exploiting. And we are being body snatched, people. I'm telling you, they're getting this stuff into us. And we're going to look at some of their plans for this here in the next section. But exploiting gut bacteriophages for human health. So there's a few highlights. It says, we emphasize the complexity and the individuality of the phagome, they call it. And that is your phagome. This is your population of phages in your gut and the link to the health of the host. We also highlight the practical applications of bacteriophages in medicine as well as in the food chain. Oh, how exciting. Yes, you're eating it. Remember a long time ago we did a whole bunch of shows on edible vaccines. And I don't remember the name of the doctor, but he had been messing around with bananas, making bananas into edible vaccines to feed those poor kids in Africa where it was too hot to make actual vaccines in a test tube. So he was going to try to figure out how to put it in food. Well, they're going to spray it on your food now is a phage spray that kills things like E. coli. Oh, that dreaded E. coli that's been spreading across the nation. So we're just going to spray viruses on your food. Don't worry about it. It won't hurt you. We don't know what they really do in the human body, and we don't really understand how far it goes with human health, but I keep eating it. So we will also indicate in this publication that I don't have access to, but I can read the abstract, that the future directions for bacteriophage research in human health will be used as biomarkers of your microbiota. We also propose the use of phages as interventions, ding, 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 targeted at the microbiota. And could that be something like the living therapeutics that they talked about back, I think, in 2016 out of MIT Technology Review, where they had funding from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and they were spin out from MIT working on their reprogramming gut bacteria to be living therapeutics that could produce things such as antibiotics inside of you. How are they going to do it? Well, they really didn't know. They were talking about reprogramming bacteria in your gut. Well, hey, wouldn't a bacteriophage, one of those little running nanorobots with a little DNA payload that specifically targets bacteria, sprayed on your food, be a perfect vehicle for that? They go in and they could target, I don't know, some standard strain of bacteria that most people have in their guts. They could make a bacteriophage synthetically, or maybe just by flipping a few switches, make a little DNA sequence and add it to the phage DNA sequence and its capsid. Spray it on your food, and when you eat that spinach on your Greek beef, you made souvlaki or something. That was also sprayed with phages. Maybe they were custom phages, pink, all to keep you healthy. Those would end up in your gut, and they could make that little DNA sequence whatever they want, because you don't know any better there, little Johnny, how to keep yourself healthy. So we're just going to do it for you. Remember, a long time ago, we had read about the whole push for nutraceuticals. I think Nestle was one of the big laboratories. Like, they had this big lab, and they had scientists working on making nutraceuticals for your food to make your food more healthy for you. Remember, caution, anytime you see something that raises an eyebrow that says, now with probiotics, like Cheetos or maybe your tea, just, you know, make sure you read the label. make sure you use Google search or whatever, DuckDuckGo. You don't want to be tracked. Make sure you figure out everything you're adding to your body and look at the studies. You find out a lot of times there have been a lot of studies. So anyway, we find out they are adding bacteriophages to our meats and bacteriophages to our vegetables as a means to control E. coli. And I saw another story about Staphylococcus as well as Listeriosis. And that would be on things such as lunch meats, ready-to-eat meats, they call them. But check this one out, too. This is a paper out of a medical abstract titled Phage Particles as Vaccine Delivery Vehicles. Ding, ding, ding. Concepts, applications, and prospects. Ooh, let's rub our hands together in an evil scientist form. All right, maybe we'll just read the introduction, or maybe, all right, let's read the abstract and then we'll start the introduction. The development of new strategies for vaccine delivery, you know, anything that isn't a needle that scares people for generating protective and long-lasting immune responses has become an expanding field of research. And thank goodness that DARPA is working on their Pandemic X or their P3 program to fix some sort of illness or pandemic within 60 days or less. In the last years, it has been recognized that bacteriophages have several potential applications in biotechnology in the medical fields of their intrinsic advantages, such as ease of manipulation and large-scale production. Yeah, they just keep reproducing over and over again. In the past two decades, bacteriophages have gained attention as vehicles for protein and peptide or DNA vaccine delivery. We're all going to be DNA vaccinated with bacteriophages in our food. I'm telling you guys, this is just too much of a coincidence. And they're even the most prevalent, abundant organism in our biosphere, and trillions upon trillions are falling from the sky. I mean, this is literally invasion of the body snatchers. I think I had called this before the gut snatchers. In this review, phage-based vaccine categories and their development are presented in detail. They'll link to this in the notes, with discussion of the potential of phage-based vaccines for the protection against microbial diseases and, of course, the golden carrot cancer treatments. Also reviewed are some recent advances in the field of phage-based vaccines. All right, so now the introduction. And this does not give a date. It gives a volume. But I don't see the date. Oh, wait. 2015. This is from 2015. So this is 3 years ago. Makes you wonder. All right, so nowadays in 2015, vaccines are defined as biological agents which are prepared by disease-causing bacteria, viruses, and so on to stimulate the host immune system for protection against a disease and for a treatment. Conventional vaccines, which are based on live attenuated or inactivated microorganisms, have made great progress, and some of them have been used in clinical applications. However, many pathogenic organisms are difficult to culture in vitro, and therefore production of live attenuated or inactivated vaccines of these pathogens is impossible. These vaccines could also pose potential risks because the pathogens may contain materials that initiate unwanted host responses. Yes, and maybe, just maybe, that host could be shedding that viral agent, let's say, for weeks on end after they'd been vaccinated. We found lots of proof on that. And I'm going to have to find those stories. But we covered that before. That was beyond doubt. There was shedding. The farmers even knew it in the chickens when they wanted to vaccinate for that bird outbreak that had taken over a while ago. All right. Moreover, in vaccine designed for cancer using whole cells, although a limited set of antigens is suitable for a cancer vaccination, tumor cells or lysed cells may contain predominantly normal self proteins that are of no therapeutic benefit or contain material that potentially carries the capacity to induce further malignancy. Oh, whoops, don't want that. So therefore, the identification and administration of specific antigens rather than crude microbial or tumor cell preparations are often a beneficial strategy, you'd think, to overcome the drawbacks like infecting you over quote-unquote curing you described above. Newly developed vaccines are rather based on a selected target of antigens derived from an infectious microorganism, a tumor cell, or an allergen, or an autoantigen, and the target molecules may be administered as purified proteins or as a peptide, or may be expressed from what? Oh, a plasmid DNA, and we're going to talk about plasmids here in a minute. Looks like we still have time. Or from a recombatant virus, and that would be a virus, maybe even a phage, that they have then inserted some other type of DNA. Maybe they got that little DNA sequence from some other virus somewhere. Like, they got a little sequence from, oh, I don't know, a smallpox virus, and they inserted it into a bacteriophage to then give your immune system a little taste of what a smallpox slice of DNA would look like. And your body would go, oh, holy shit, let's make up an immunity to that. That could maybe, I don't think I'm too off there, be considered a recombatant virus and using a phage to get it inside of you. Such molecular vaccines, besides their advantages compared with conventional vaccines, also have problems with use in medical applications. The most important of these obstacles are the briefly mentioned as follows. Oh, come on, they're going to make us read more. Safety and ease of production are two particular advantages of peptide vaccines over conventional. However, problems include poor immunogenicity for the simple recombatant or a synthetic peptide. Yeah, put in some synthetic DNA. And we need to potentially stimulate T cells and elicit an immunological memory. As yet, there are no human peptide-based vaccines on the market as of 2014. And this arises primarily from the difficulties associated with peptide stability and delivery and the challenges posed by the delivery of human immunogenics. Well, I hate to tell you people, but they are messing with this stuff now. These are all these human trials they want to start going. And honestly, with the phages being sprayed on our food, you don't know what they're using in industrial applications to hose down all the saws and the chopping grinders and the packaging conveyor belts and that. You just don't know. For the past two decades, nucleic acid-based vaccines, including DNA and RNA vaccines, have exhibited a great promise in immunotherapy for various diseases. Comparing with conventional vaccines, the nucleic acid vaccines have represented superiorities as well as good safety, specificity to induce an immune response for an antigen of interest, introduction of both B and T cell responses, relatively low cost of production, so it's cheap, and an ease of manufacturing. However, they have showed poor immunogenicity in clinical trials, so we've already tried them, and they have not yet been used in humans as commercial projects or products. The inherent barriers of the body, moreover, the poor stability in the in vivo distribution from the vaccine hinders detection, and they present a confirmation for their robustness. Furthermore, of the desired properties of phages, their ability was also investigated to develop a vehicle, ding, 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 for immunogenic determinant delivery. So this would be the delivery of some sort of immunogenic product that they made, some sort of little sequence to vaccinate you, and using phages to do that. Today, phage-based vaccines have been evaluated in areas of prevention and treatment of various diseases, and data showed that the immune response was primed. So that means that they sound effect, thereby to review attempts that to have insight into the important aspects of the application of phages as a vaccine carrier, including phage vaccine categories and their development, immunogenic properties of the phage particle, processing, and presented pathways of the phage-carrying vaccine component in human cells. Furthermore, concerns and challenges regarding phage immunization for humans are also addressed. And hate to tell you guys, but I'm not going to continue on that one. It goes on and on. You can read the rest of it. It is a very huge paper. So then, within that paper, there was an image. And this image really caught my attention. Exploiting gut bacteriophages for human health. So there is a drawing, an outline of a human body. There is a big oval over the area from the lower chest all the way to the upper legs. That would represent your whole inner gut, inner workings there. With a bunch of different colored dots, all with little different colored connectors between each other. Then there are some going in arrows, and then on the other side there's going out arrows, and each with a little notation on them. So let's take a look at all the ways that they are planning to use phages in the exploitation of your gut for human health. So number one listed as a going in item into the gut area would be phages for disease therapy. So they're gonna cure you. Remember, living therapeutics. Number two, little arrow going in, is phages as drivers of your microbiota. Ding, ding. Fix your gut. And number three, another arrow going in, phages as delivery vectors. And that would be those vaccines we just read about. Now, on the other side, there are three outgoing. So these would be statistics that they, or things that maybe they could use it for. Number one outgoing would be phages for food safety. And maybe that would be to keep your colony of E. coli in your gut under control. Number two outgoing is phages as biomarkers of health and disease. Maybe they could be used as little recorders. And yes, here we go. And number three, phages as reporters, little bacteria reporters. We read about some of that before, if you remember, but I thought they were using CRISPR to do that. Maybe they can use phages as well. And I think somewhere here, we do find, yes, the very next story. This is out of nature.com, March 21st, 2017. Genetic engineering of a temperate phage-based delivery system for CRISPR-Cas9 antimicrobials against Staphylococcus aureus. Now, if they can get CRISPR-Cas9 into a phage and load up its payload to have it go in and infect cells. Remember, CRISPR was the original immune system of a bacteria, and I think Georgia Porgy Church was the one who discovered it in E. coli. If they are able to target that system, they would be able to make little snippety snips and maybe even be able to insert things and use the phages to get it inside of you. And maybe it's even being sprayed on our food, like we found out is being done since, was it 2006? It's been a long time. All right, so here's one headline. I don't know if I want to read this because this gets a little bit technical, but CRISPR targeting reveals a reservoir of common phages associated with the human gut microbiome. So they already have been using CRISPR targeting to go after the microbiota in our gut microbiome. Now, here's one that caught my attention the other day, May 30th, 2018, on AliveScience.com. We have talked about the gut-brain connection. It hasn't been recently, but we spent a lot of time on the microbiome a long time ago and took a look at how interconnected they are. Well, this title was pretty amusingly written. This was titled LifeScience.com, "You may have a second brain in your butt, and it is smarter than you think." Well, who knew it? You're reading these words because you have a brain in your butt. No, because you have a brain in your head. But did you also know that you have a brain in your butt? Okay, not a literal brain, but more of an autonomous matrix of millions of neurons that can somehow control intestinal muscle movement without any help from your central nervous system. These neurons don't actually live in your butt, but they do live in your colon or your large intestine, which is that large tube-like organ that connects the small intestine to the rectum and shepherds what remains of the food you ate through the final leg of its journey. Scientists call this colon of intelligence. The colon of intelligence is part of your enteric nervous system. When we read about the enteric nervous system as part of the vagus nerve, and because it can function without instructions from the brain or spine, some scientists like to call it your second brain. But how smart is this autonomous intestinal brain? Well, scientists don't quite know yet, but according to a new study in mice published on May 29th in the Journal of Neuroscience, it might actually be pretty smart for an intestine. The enteric nervous system contains millions of neurons essential for organization of behavior of the intestine, wrote the team. And when researchers stimulated isolated mouse colons with mild electrical shocks, they saw, quote, a novel pattern of rhythmic coordinated neuronal firing that corresponded directly to muscle movements in nearby sections of the large intestine. These rhythmic, synchronized blasts of neuronal activity likely help to stimulate specific sections of intestinal muscles at a standard rate, and this ensures that the muscle contractions keep fecal matter moving in the right direction, and that would be out of the body at a steady pace. This revealed that activity in the enteric nervous system can temporarily coordinate activity over significant distances along the length of the colon, and they also found similar synchronized neuronal routines are common in the early stages of brain development, and that would be our real brain. This could mean that the pattern they identified in the colon is a quote-unquote primordial property held over from the early stages of our enteric nervous system's evolution. But it could be even more important than that, because some scientists hypothesize that the enteric nervous system actually evolved before the central nervous system, and the neuron firing pattern in your colon might represent the earliest functioning brain in your body. Yes, that would mean the brain in your butt could actually be your first brain, not your second brain. And if this is true, you could say that mammalian brains evolved first to poop and then to take care of more complex business. However, this is the first time that such a neuron firing pattern has ever been detected in the colon. And so far, it has only been found in mice. We haven't yet found it in humans, but don't worry about it, because we're going to find ways to manipulate it for our own purposes. And the researchers are confident that their findings could apply to other mammals too. But a clear understanding of the enteric nervous system's power in humans will require further study and lots of serious thinking from both types of brains. But yeah, so maybe it's even the first brain in our gut. That's why this is so important. They will be tinkering with biological organisms that live in our gut and putting who knows what in there. So, all right, where do we go from here? I think I also want to do this one. The human gut mobile metagenome. Now, who knew we had a metagenome as well? This is out of National Institute of Health, December 2010. And this one looks a little bit technical, so maybe if it gets technical, we'll skip ahead. Humans share the planet with an estimated 10 to the 30th power of prokaryotic cells in interactions with these microbes has shaped the course of our human development. Ding, ding, ding. Modern humans have co-evolved with microbial communities that have colonized various habitats offered by the human body and now maintain a commensal or a symbiotic relationship with their hosts. Of the numerous microbial communities harbored by the human body, the gastrointestinal tract is home to the largest, and the microbiota residence in the distal colon of an individual adult consists of an estimated 10 to the 13th to 10 to the 14th power of individual prokaryotic cells that belong to an estimated 150 to 180 species, which goes on and on and on, and the numerous beneficial functions undertaken by this microbial community and its capacity to direct the development, ding, 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 of host physiology epitomizes the co-evolution of the gut microbiota with its human host. Body snatchers, people. This influence, and we are being evolved. Remember, George Church's Regenesis have talked about this very thing. They talked about making humans impervious to viruses, and they were going to re-encode with their Recode project some of the human immunity system. So this influence may even extend to the aspects of human behavior. And remember, that is that gut brain connection, and the benefits gained by acquisition of beneficial microbes may have partially contributed to the evolution of human social behavior and group living, which facilitates the transmission of these microbial symbiotes to their new host. So they may have even influenced our brains to make us more social creatures, and then we pass them between each other through our saliva, through our spittle droplets that come out when we breathe, through our biological need to reproduce as a species. We've been evolved as a species in a co-evolution with our microbial communities. Sorry, this goes on and on and on. You can read all about this. There's a lot of literature about this co-evolution that is happening between microbes and the human hosts. Now, one other thing, and where is that story? I think this one is here. There was a story that we covered back in 2015. Yes, it has been at least that long. I think I started on the air in 2011. This is now 2018. We covered DARPA all along from the very beginning. But this one we covered at the time. DARPA wants to engineer fake bacteria. It's not viruses now. Bacteria. To patrol the human gut. This sounds a lot like that Living Therapeutics program as well. That MIT spinout and Bill Melinda Gates funding was working on. DARPA wants to engineer fake bacteria to patrol the human gut. June 16th, 2015. By building synthetic bacteria that can be taken in a pill form and maybe just put on your food, DARPA-funded researchers seek to keep our digestive systems in fighting form. To any tourist who has ever gotten a case of traveler's tummy knows venturing to foreign countries can sometimes be a little tough on your digestive system. But tourists aren't the only ones who visit foreign lands. Members of the military do as well, so that's why DARPA is involved. DARPA invested $4.7 million to the Weiss Institute of Biologically Inspired Engineering to develop a squadron, and that would be swarms of genetically engineered bacteria that will be able to identify, report on, and attack harmful bugs in our gastrointestinal tract. So there you go, people. These are those little bacteria reporters we covered back a few stories ago. Researchers at the Institute, an alliance between Harvard Medical School, which is where George Church resides, plus other universities and medical centers, will be using the funding to create synthetic bacteria that will be able to detect inflammation in the gastrointestinal tract, and the bacteria will be taken in pill form. Now, I don't know, I wanted to get a little bit beyond here. Some of the bacteria that they are tinkering with, they are able to do other things with, and that would be insert something called a plasmid. Now, plasmids exist within a bacteria. A plasmid, so maybe they can put some DNA into a bacteriophage that targets a certain bacteria, and then it injects the DNA that then infects the plasmid that has co-evolved inside of a bacteria that carries its own little DNA package to then reproduce, because they reproduce very much like the lytic life cycle of a virus. So what is a plasmid? Well, let's get there really quick before I'm going to wrap this up. A plasmid, and this will be for some summer homework. Take that MIT course on biology, and let's see if we can get a good understanding of this by September. A plasmid is a small, circular, double-stranded DNA molecule that is distinct from a cell's chromosomal DNA. Plasmids naturally exist in bacterial cells, and they also occur in some eukaryotes. Often, the genes carried in plasmids provide bacteria with genetic advantages, such as antibiotic resistance. Well, hey, how amazing that phages are what they are using to target antibiotic resistance in bacteria. Plasmids have a wide range of lengths, but from roughly 1,000 DNA base pairs to hundreds of thousands of base pairs. And when a bacterium divides, all of the plasmids that are contained within that cell are copied to each daughter cell of each new plasmid. Bacteria can also transfer plasmids to one another through a process called conjugation. Well, I wonder what that is. That's pretty funny. Scientists have also taken advantage of plasmids to use them as a tool to clone, transfer, and manipulate genes. Oh no! Plasmids are used experimentally for the purposes that are called vectors. So plasmids become DNA vectors. Researchers can insert DNA fragments or genes into a plasmid vector, creating a so-called recombinant plasmid. This plasmid can then be introduced into a bacterium by way of a process called transformation. And then, because the bacteria divides rapidly, they can be used as vectors to copy those DNA fragments that were injected through transformation into large quantities. Yes, so all we got to do is get it into your gut. Well, here we go. Feed pellets. This is out of ScienceDirect.com. Feed pellets containing something called chitosan, which I think is a part of a hard beetle shell. Chitosan nanoparticles as plasmid DNA oral delivery system for fish. Oh, yes, we're going to experiment on the fish first using this phage-based nanoparticle encapsulated within the DNA to feed it to the fish. And here's one more, plasmid-mediated gene therapy for cardiovascular disease. What? Yes, gene therapies to fix cardiovascular disease, many of which the aging population is going to end up having in the future because of a sedentary lifestyle and your consumption of glyphosate and getting viruses that you never knew you had. Plasmid-mediated gene therapy for cardiovascular disease. And I hate to tell you, but at some point in the future, they probably will try to recommend that one to me. All this mad science gone mad is going to be within my clutches. And I don't know if I'm going to step up for that one. I don't think so. So, all right, guys, I am down to the last 4 minutes of the show. And if a new browser will load, I want to make sure I tell everybody that I have set up a new page for Before the First Cup on Spreaker. It is Spreaker with an R .com/ Before the First Cup. I think that's what it is. Or backslash, wait. Spreaker.com. Yeah, / Before the First Cup. And I will continue that subscription. And in September, when I have some free time again and the weather starts to get kind of crappy, I will pick up Before the First Cup again, and I'll start following some of our categories. I'm sure over 3 months, there'll be a lot of mad science that has happened, so there will be no lack of stories. So we'll continue the saga. But over the last year, everybody has known that I had a stroke back a year ago, almost exactly a year ago, in a couple weeks. And over that time, that causes a lot of havoc on your body, especially any type of catastrophic event like that. And that catastrophic event has now activated like long time dormant things that I've had that have been very quiet, but so it's now turned into autoimmune and things of that nature. And the only way that you can put any of that back to bed is to relax, keep your stress level down, get your immune system up. A lot of it's mental, honestly, guys. Like, I have to catch myself. I notice I'm trying to use a little bit of biofeedback on myself. Like, when I start to feel anxious, when I start to read these things, and I start to feel that stress hormone, that cortisol, start pumping through my veins, I feel my blood pressure go up, and I feel my head get a little tingly, and I know that that is not good for me. So I got to bring it back down, breathe a little deeper, think about something else. Listen to a little bit of music, but it's very difficult. And I hate to say it, but doing this show, at least right now, with all the added other things, as well as running the network, has it's been a multi-layered effect on the stress levels that I've been experiencing. So I want to say a huge thank you to everyone that has helped make UCY.TV possible. Without you guys, without the listeners, without the hosts, who donated their time to be here every show for years on end, to all of the supporters and the donators to the show, you guys have been great. Every time we had technical issues, the UCY audience stepped up and helped me cover fixing whatever we had to fix. This network would not have been possible without the collaboration of all of us involved. So, all right, guys, well, this is what I didn't want to do. I want you to make sure the YouTube channel, I'm going to have the auto ripping turned off as of Friday night. Shows will run live through Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday, guys, because I have stuff to do this weekend. I have things I have to help my dad with. Saturday and Sunday, because I don't have time to pull anything. I'm going to run repeats of all the shows that normally give me new shows that I have to edit. And again, that's a whole commitment of time, and I don't have time to do that anymore. So we're going to run repeats of those shows. But Darren Weeks, who I stream directly from his stream, and Hal Anthony on Sunday, who I stream directly from his Spreaker or Real Liberty Media, those are going to be new shows. So she will get a graceful falling asleep. And then on Monday, maybe when I get back into town here, I will figure out what to do with the stream. But the website will stay up. The contact information for the hosts and where they went will be updated. And my new shows will be starting as